Disembodied is now doing interviews. I had to kind of round up people that I wanted to interview. It took a while, but that's the territory we're moving into. It's going to be a lot of fun. Hope you enjoy it. I'm going to make a quick statement about my sound studio where I record. I don't have one. I am recording in an apartment, so you will sometimes hear the quacking of ducks in the background, or a cat meowing, or traffic on occasion, or crashing noises because there's construction in my complex. I apologize for these things. I can try to edit them out, but you know I'm not a sound engineer yet, so please bear with me.
Welcome to Disembodied Podcast. I'm speaking with Brendan Kumaraswamy from Master Talk. He's got his own YouTube channel. Brendan, what's your background? How did you start Master Talk?
Yeah, absolutely, Evie. Thanks for having me on. So essentially what happened is when I was in university, I used to do these things called case competitions. Think of it like professional sports, but for nerds. So while other guys my age were, well, you know, playing sports like soccer or football or rugby, wasn't really my thing, as you probably tell from looking at me. So what I did instead is I applied that same competitive spirit, but to presentations. So for years, I presented hundreds of times. And through those presentations and through coaching dozens of people, when I started corporate a couple of years after that, I kind of just asked myself a simple question, which is, how do I make a difference in the world? And that's when the idea for the YouTube channel came to be, because I realized a lot of the communication information out there isn't really good. You know, you hear advice like, oh, you should be yourself. You should get up on stage. I was like, what are you supposed to do? This nonsense. So I started a YouTube channel in my mother's basement. One thing led to another, and the rest was history.
So you did public speaking quite a lot then before you started the YouTube channel.
I probably belted like 500 presentations before I started posting.
Wow. And you did these in business environments or all over?
You got it. So case competition essentially is when a business gives you a problem. And you have to solve that problem in a couple of hours and show a solution for the board of executives. It's a very odd scenario. A lot of people who hear me say this go, why would anyone put themselves through this for free? Like, this makes no sense. It's so bizarre. But yeah, it was a sport I used to play and I loved every second of it. You know, that thrill that you get from impressing executives who are triple your age and they're just looking at you like, how is this person 20? This makes no sense. So yeah, it was a lot of fun for me. And that's where I learned all my communication skills.
So it's almost like a volunteer situation where you volunteer your problem solving to a real company. That's what you're talking about, right?
You got it. It's like being a part of a sports team. So essentially what happens is all of these universities get together and host this big grandiose competition, and companies come as judges because they want to recruit the next top talent within each university. So in the same way that lets you go to an Ivy League school to get into investment banking or management consulting, all of these top coveted positions, the corporate world, you can think of this weird case club as the feeder school for all of those top jobs.
Okay. Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't go to business school. I have degrees in other stuff. So that's okay. I wouldn't be familiar with this directly from my own experience.
All good. But it's that's a very pretty cool. Niche. Yeah.
I think it's really cool because it serves your own, like building your own argumentation skills and presentation skills, and you're also helping other people too, which is amazing. They should probably pay you to do it.
I appreciate it.
So you have come up with some ways that you think can help people. I know one is that you try to get them to be not afraid of speaking in public. And how do you do that?
Yeah, absolutely. So the way that I think about it, Evie, is I like to ask empowering questions to kind of get the ball rolling. And the biggest question I like to ask people is, how would the world change if you were an exceptional communicator? So when you think of public speaking from that lens, the reason why you want to master the art of communication will change based on who you are. So I would start there. The other thing I would say when it comes to fear is fear is normal. It's always going to be there in small shape or form on what you think about public speaking and the fear that might be associated to it. But what I'll also add to the conversation is that your message needs to be stronger than the fear. As long as what you care to present is more important than the fear that you feel, you will always win in the end. So my challenge to people is always to ask themselves, who are you trying to serve with your message? Why are you speaking? Who is this going to impact? And it doesn't need to be a million people. It just needs to be the people that matter to you. And even if that's just one person. And if you can really hone in on that, I think you'll be very successful and the fear will automatically dissipate.
Yeah, I know. I've definitely been fearful at times in public speaking situations, although I've taught English at the college level before. So that kind of got me over it, I would say. That was a good experience for me. In the company where I work, we had a guy actually pass out because he had to do a presentation to his coworkers, and he kind of freaked out and, you know, wasn't breathing right and just like dropped to the floor.
Well, wow.
It was scary. So I know how scared people get, and it is really a tough thing to like overcome that terrible, paralyzing fear. And, you know, I think one thing is to like master your breathing somehow. Do you do breathing exercises at all or teach that to people?
Yes and no. I don't focus too much of my coaching on breathing, but I definitely understand the value of it, especially before a presentation to just relax yourself and get ready for the presentation. But yeah, absolutely.
Okay. And you mentioned something when I talked to you before about decisions being more important than passions. So what did you want to say about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you know, what I've realized over my life, Evie, is I think too many human beings waste too much time finding a passion or trying to. Because the issue is, and this doesn't apply, by the way, for the 5% of the people who are listening, who know what that is. Brendan, I know my passion. I know what I need to do in life. Trust me, you're in the huge minority of people. Most people don't even know what that is. They try and find it and get no luck. And I was one of those people. And the advice I have for those individuals is to understand that decisions are more important than passions. Decisions are specific. They're actionable. They allow you to move the ball. They allow you to get the ball rolling and achieve results. And if you can focus in and hone in on that ability to share your truth and really condense that message, I think that's when you're going to be very successful. So that's why my point of view is, when you think about decisions, when you think about what to do in life, I always ask myself a very different question than, what are you passionate about? And that question is, what does the world need you most to do right now, and why? And if you ask that question instead, it's going to be a lot easier for you to make decisions. When I was 12, the answer wasn't start a YouTube channel on public speaking. No, of course not. The answer was get a corporate job because your parents are having trouble paying ends meet and you should take care of them. Right? So I studied really hard, became an accountant, got that job. And then I asked myself the question again. I switched careers, became a technology consultant. Then I did all these case competitions, these weird things. And I realized over the course of my life that I was the youngest professional speech coach in the world. So then when I asked myself that question a third time, what does the world need you most to do right now and why? I realized the answer was Master Talk. But here's the thing, Evie. If I never made the decision to be an accountant, if I never made the decision to be in technology consulting, I never would have made it. I never even would have had the communication expertise to do Master Talk. And that's the message I really want to push across.
Right. One thing was a bridge to the next, to the next, to the next.
Exactly. And it was impossible for me to connect the dots forward. As Steve Jobs puts it, you can only connect them backward.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to see it. What would you tell people who, you know, have like graduated from college this year maybe and don't see much on the horizon in terms of how they're going to find a job, or what do you think people should do?
I think they should eliminate. So what I mean by that is, it's a lot easier for you to figure out what you don't want to do in life than what you do want to do in life. So for example, what next does I like to bring a lot of people through is this idea of, do you want to be a pastor? Do you want to be a garbage man? Do you want to be a plumber? Do you want to be an accountant? There's nothing wrong with any of these careers, but the people who are listening are saying yes and no immediately. Oh no, I'd never be a pastor or something like that, right? But when you think of it like that, it's a lot more empowering, because the issue with today's society is you have too many choices. So we're paralyzed to make anyone because we're scared of what the ramifications are. That's why I think it's easier for you to take out what you absolutely don't want to do, shorten that list. And then when the list is very small, you can focus all your attention on trying to get that specific job. That makes your life a lot easier, and it's much easier for you to compete on the job market because you know you're going to be good at that thing.
That's a good tip, I think. So what motivates you? I should ask, do you have any spiritual practices or anything, even if they're non-religious? You know, this is not a religious podcast, but do you have anything that kind of sustains you or keeps you going, some sort of thing you do each day that motivates you?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say the one habit that really made me successful in life, Evie, I guess relatively so, is this idea of asking yourself one hard question about life every single day. As Tony Robbins puts it best, the quality of your life is solely determined by the quality of the questions that you dare to ask yourself. And I'm a big believer in that concept. Questions like, what are you pretending not to know? If you had all the money in the world, how would you spend your time? If you died tomorrow, what would your funeral speech say about you? And if you were a god, what would you do first and why? These questions are freely available. I mean, anyone can answer them, but most people don't. Most people don't want to walk that lane. But it's by walking that lane that you arrive at insights. And you start to ask questions like, hey, wait a second, why is 90% of the human race saving up till 65, but then Steve Jobs, who had access to all the money in the world, who had all the best doctors, died at 56, Kobe Bryant died at 41. Isn't that bizarre? And you start to question everything until you realize that nothing makes sense except the story that you create for yourself.
I think it seems to be about priorities, like what is your priority, you know, above all? And you have to kind of make a priority pyramid or something and address the things at the top of that pyramid and then go down from there, maybe. One thing I think I chose a long time ago, for example, is that I have had stressful positions before, and I didn't want to be totally and utterly stressed out my entire life. So I had some stressful positions, and then I kind of took other positions, other career journeys, let's say. And, you know, some people might think, well, that was unproductive, but I realized where I didn't want to go. So I guess it's in line with what you're saying. How do you feel about this past year? Has it been a boon or a bust to your personal plans?
For me, anything that happens is always a boon, Evie, because I'm just grateful to be in a first world country. You know, I have this saying in life that perspective frees us from the chains of constant complaining. If you understand what...
That's good.
Yeah, I appreciate it. You know, the other way I think about it is, if you really understand what's happening in the world, like as an individual, you really understand how lucky you are to just be in the US or in Canada or in Europe or in some first world country, you start to really take all your problems and throw them to the wayside, because none of them really matter for the most part, except those couple of big ones that might be troublesome to your life. So yeah, was I sad that most of my revenue dropped to zero and that all my speaking engagements pretty much got canceled? Yeah, of course, I cried for a couple of days. But I also said, how can I reinvent myself? I still have my day job. It's not like everything's lost here. How do I play this game in a way that makes 2020 my best year ever? So that's when I had the idea of guesting on shows or writing my YouTube content a couple of years in advance, or you know, or transitioning from a speaking engagement model to a coaching model, right? And, you know, now I make a lot more money than I did before COVID even hit, right? So it's this key of the mindset piece. Understand that you weren't able, you can't say 2020 is canceled, because it's like you can go to a bank and get a loan back for it, right? So that's my my thought process.
How have you changed your ability to overcome problems? Like, how did you used to overcome problems versus today? What do you think has really changed?
How have you gotten better at it, basically? Yeah, for sure. I definitely think at the beginning, I was too emotionally invested in the problems, and I would see it more of as a single player game. So let's say when I'd look at a problem, I'd be like, okay, how do I solve this? Whereas today, my approach is very different. I'm a lot more objective. I look at the problem as it is. And I think of more in it as a group format. So now I have a group of colleagues, advisors, who kind of help me think through these problems and remind me how small they are, how insignificant they are compared to the bigger vision of what I'm trying to do or what we're all trying to do in this life. So I think for me, what's really changed is getting a group of advisors who give you solution-oriented feedback. So they would say something like, this sucks, but we can do this instead to fix that. That's what I would say is the big one.
And these are friends or colleagues? Who are these people?
A mixture. So this could be friends, colleagues, people I pay for their time. It's definitely a mix, a wide variety of all these types of people. So not really a consistent formula there.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea too. That's a solid tip. What do you have planned for next year if things either get better very quickly with the pandemic or don't? Do you think you can pivot easily?
Oh, yeah. I think what's great, one of the biggest blessings with COVID is, especially in the months of March, April, and May, is I don't think it'll ever get worse than that. I think the only thing worse than that is if there's a civil war or something. Right? Like, that's the only...
We're hoping it doesn't get to that, right?
Yeah, trust me, I am too. But honestly, but at that point, if that happens, I mean, we're all dead anyway, so much so.
Yeah, it's Mad Max after that.
Yeah, then it's just fend for yourself, get those, buy that shelter and just run away. But assuming that doesn't happen, I honestly, I've tried to, and this is an exercise I recommend everybody do, whether you're a business owner or not, is always assume the worst case. Just mm-hmm. No one expected this type of worst case where it's a war, but not really, right? Mm-hmm. It's like bizarre. But besides this, like try and imagine other worst case scenarios. Let's say the economy plummets next year, blah, 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 and play to that. So now I'm a lot more conservative with my cash. You know, I make different decisions. I'm not going out there to buy that new car, right? I'm being a lot more smart with the money now. I'm tightening up and making sure I don't have any debt. So that's what I really recommend for people. It's not like, you need to know exactly what you're going to do every single day of 2021. But rather saying in general, what are some of the things I can give up next mm-hmm. year on so that I can really make sure that I come out of this one a winner? That's my advice for people out there.
Yeah, I have an episode where I talked about worst case scenarios and how sometimes people dwell on them too much and use them from day to day. And it can almost lead to a type of depression, you know, just to dwell on that. But I understand what you're saying. You know, it's like you have to be prepared for things not turning out very well. But I would just caution people to not constantly do a worst case scenario every day in every way, because it does kind of bring you down to a point of defeat.
Like, I definitely agree. You don't want to do this every hour of every day. It might be bad for your health, but definitely every quarter or every 6 months or something.
All right. Do you have any parting words or philosophies to share with the audience?
Yeah, for sure. I'll leave with a book recommendation and life advice. So okay. The book recommendation is Thirst by Scott Harrison. A lot of people ask me for book recommendations on public speaking communication. And I think that is probably the most underrated book I've ever read in my life on the topic. Scott's really smart. He has the CEO of a nonprofit. I think the way that he thinks about messaging branding is really key. So I highly recommend the read. For life advice, I would say be insane or be the same. If you want to be like everyone else, that's totally fine. But if you want to make a difference in the world, you want to do something important, you want to do something big, my advice is that for you to achieve that, you need to practice the art of insanity. What does that mean? Don't you find it odd that a 22-year-old kid started a YouTube channel? Not on vlogs, not on pranks, not on comedy, but on public speaking and communication tips. Then he went on to coach C-suite executives the year after, which are CEOs of companies. But he still lives with his mother. He's literally talking to you on a mattress he sleeps on. He dances alone in his basement an hour a day. He karaoke's in 8 different languages. And he loves Justin Bieber. How does any of this make any sense at all? And that, Evie... is the point.
When that paints quite a picture.
Yeah, I know, right? But the point I'm driving is when every decision in your life makes sense to the only person that it should matter to, which is you, you'll probably be very successful in life. So be insane or be the same.
Right. You got to take a chance. I believe that. I do. You have to put yourself out there a little bit. And the thing is people come out of college and they're they're kind of schooled to prepare for corporate conformity, I think. And it's hard to get rid of that mindset. I think they start giving you that mindset early on in school, even before college. So you have to be entrepreneurial and take a chance sometimes. And not everything is about money, but you definitely need money to survive. So, you know, it always has to be somewhat central to your life, I guess. You know what? I want to talk about the languages real quick before we go here. How did you learn all the languages that you... Don't you know 8 languages or...
Yeah, I'm happy to clarify. So I speak 3 languages, but I can karaoke in 8. So I don't actually speak 8 languages. I can just sing songs in that language.
Oh, I see.
But I am trilingual, so I speak English, French, and Tamil.
That's pretty cool.
Thanks.
I speak German myself. I speak some Spanish, although my Spanish is kind of embarrassing. But I'm right there with you on the language track. I love languages. And, you know, that I've taught English. I've also taught German before. And, you know, that's always an interesting gig as well.
That's cool.
All right. Well, thank you so much for sharing your perspective on things with us. And I wish you the best. Why don't you give us a way to look you up? You've got Master Talk on YouTube. That's your channel. And what other information can you give us? How else can we find you?
Yeah, absolutely. The best place to find me is definitely the YouTube channel. All you got to do is type Master Talk in one word and you'll find me right there.
Okay, you're the only one with Master Talk in the channel name?
I think so. If you type it in one word, yeah.
Okay. There's so many that are similar nowadays. I noticed that, you know. If one is successful, then another one kind of jumps on it. Do you have a website as well? Or
I do, but it's not really good. It's more just to, if you want to talk to me. But I think it's easier for YouTube. But yeah, it's mastertalk.ca.
Okay. All right. We can put that in the show notes as well.
Sure.
So I thank you, Brendan. It's been a great time talking to you. You're pretty amazing, actually.
Thanks, Evie.
You're like a Renaissance man, I think.
I don't know what that means, but I'll take that as a yes.
It means you're well-schooled in like all subjects, right? You can do the business gig. You can do the languages. You can do public speaking. I would imagine you're good at writing if you can do public speaking, right?
I mean, maybe not amazing, but sure, good enough. I'll take it.
Take that compliment.
Sure, I'll take it. I'll call myself the Renaissance man from now on.
Yeah, do it. All right. Thanks for coming on. And I wish you the best in 2021. It's coming up soon.
Thanks, Evie. Really appreciate the time.
Thank you for listening to Disembodied Podcast. Please remember that I have a website at disembodiedpodcast.com. You can leave comments there. And I do have some video links as well, along with the podcast episodes. Happy holidays.